Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
White House press briefing soon to begin. We're going to learn how Corinne Jean-Pierre is going to lie to us today. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today, 833-468-8669. Call in, feel free. 833-GOT-TONY. She did an interview yesterday. I was surprised. She did an interview with the news director of WBT in Charlotte. Now, a little bit of full disclosure. My main station, my flagship, is WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana. It is owned by Urban One, and Urban One owns WBT. Just, I want to make sure I shared the conversation. I have received no email at all or in any way stating, hey, you should talk about this. No one has brought it up to me. Just want to say, for the sake of clarity. But their news guy, Mark Garrison, had an interview with White House Press Secretary Corinne Jean-Pierre. Like, I want to know how he got the interview. She said yes to the interview? That is stunning. And so he is in one segment of the interview. I've got the thing here. I haven't even heard it in full yet, this segment. But at one moment of the interview, he says to her, everybody who knew I was going to do this interview wanted me to ask you if Joe Biden has dementia. Can you talk about his mental state? He asked that question. Holy! And she was like, how dare you? So I have it here. While we're waiting for the press briefing, I'm like, we might as well get a look inside the fragile psyche of Corinne Jean-Pierre, who doesn't get asked tough questions unless it comes from Peter Ducey. Listen.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her? Does the president have dementia? So before I move on from that, does he?
That Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a credibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
You're taking us down this rabbit hole. Let me.
It's not a rabbit hole. The question gets asked every day across America. Millions upon millions of people want to know what's up with Joe Biden's mental state. That's not a rabbit hole. Corinne Jean-Pierre gets so defensive so quick, as opposed to saying, oh, Mark, you have to stop watching Fox News. The president's great. Mind is good. Let's talk about what it takes to govern and win this next election. Or maybe Hatch actually can't say that. Let's talk about some of the great governing going on. You want to talk about what's happening with the economy? You want to talk about what's happening with dealing with race relations? Like, she could have picked her topics, right? She could have gone in any direction. But instead, she's like, oh, no, rabbit hole. How dare you? So insulting. I'm clutching my pearls. Oh, the vapors. Good God. That's not a bad Corinne Jean-Pierre impression, by the way. I might be able to take that on tour. Maybe start opening up for Carrot Top, who, for the record, is still on stage in Vegas. That guy is making millions. Still. Unbelievable. It continues.
Let me be very clear about this. For the past several years, the president's physician has laid out in a comprehensive way the president's health. This is a president, if you watch him every day, if you really pay attention to his record and what he has done, you will see exactly how focused he's been on the American people, how historic his actions have been. And so I'm not even going to take the premise of your question. I think it is incredibly insulting.
But you are reacting to it in a way that makes us think that Mark Garrison might have hit upon something. Your reaction is out of control. Your reaction, Corinne Jean-Pierre, is the story here. Brush by it and move on. You are 4 seconds away from telling me how spry the president is. You brush past it and you move on. This is a great example like this. So this has been, so far, a minute and 5 seconds I shared with you. That is all you need to hear to know how bad she is at her job. How little skill set she has. She can't do this. She doesn't have the natural glibness. She doesn't have the natural connections. She doesn't have the natural moves. And when confronted, she doesn't know how to smile and parry. Good gosh. And she's given time to answer. It's not like Garrison's even pressing her. And by the way, I love that technique. I do that technique. Oh, let them talk. Let them talk. Let them find their own place to create the hiccup. And then we can discuss where they engage the hiccup. It continues.
And so we can move on to the next question.
Gas prices and grocery prices, then, big topics here in North Carolina. How does Mr. Biden win votes when people don't have as much disposable income?
Look, the president understands. He grew up in a middle-class family, a working-class family in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He gets it. He understands how difficult it is for Americans who are sitting around their kitchen table every month trying to figure out what they're going to pay for. You have to remember when the president walked into this administration, there were multiple crises happening. There was COVID. There was the economy was in a tailspin because of the last administration, because of what the President Trump left us with. Now you're asking me about gas prices. The president took action on gas prices. Let's not forget Russia's invasion on Ukraine skyrocketed prices of gas. And because the president took action, we are in a different place than we were a year ago on gas.
Exactly how many talking points is she going to remember and literally throw at Mark Garrison from WBT here? Was it calm, her answer? No. Was it relaxed? No. Was it focused? No. Was it sincere? No. Was it connecting to any listener? No. It was manic. It was scattershot. It was fearful. This is a basic question. The price of eggs is not just the story in North Carolina. It's the story in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's the story in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's the story in Bloomington. It's the story in Atlanta. It's the story in St. Louis. It's the story in Detroit. It's the story. The price of eggs is what you're talking about. Are you telling me the White House press secretary wasn't prepared for a question about the price of eggs? And the answer you just heard is no. No, she wasn't. She sounds nervous and afraid and angry, and she's just rattling things off that come to her mind to get her out of the situation. Oh my gosh. I didn't get to hear this part. I had heard that first part. I didn't get to hear that part about how that I heard it the first time you did. Just now. That's nuts.
Gas prices, eggs, milk, seafood products, all the important groceries, those costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow. Wow.
She hung up.
Wow. That's unbelievable. She goes through the laundry list and hangs up on Mark Garrison. That is unbelievable. Unbelievably telling. You want to know how weak she is? That's how weak she is. People want to tell you she's historic, she's gay, and she's black. None of it matters. We don't care. She can't answer a question. She can't carry a tune. She's not good at this. There are plenty of gay women who would be great at this. There are plenty of black women who would be great at this. There are plenty of gay black women who would be great at this. True, I'd have to do the interviewing to find them, because it's not like I have a binder full of gay black women just sitting here waiting for me. And probably the ones that I would find who are really qualified would be conservatives. But neither here nor there. Being historic is irrelevant. Being good at your job matters. And she's not. She's not. If the question is not a softball that she gets beforehand where she can practice her answer, she can't do it. On the most basic, basic, basic of questions. Holy cow. That is something. Lord only knows what this today's press conference is going to bring. She's already late. Sounds about right. I'm Tony Katz.
I want it right here in Oakland. I wanted someone who was battle-tested, able to withstand criticism and the controversy and all the defamations and slanders and perjuries that are thrown against anyone who embarks on a presidential campaign. I wanted an advocate who has seen corruption of our regulatory agencies firsthand, who shares my indignation about the way it allows regulated industries to commoditize our food, our wildlife, and our children. I wanted someone who would honor the traditions of our nation as a nation of immigrants, but who also understands that to be a nation, we need secure borders.
Robert F. Kennedy is going to take votes from Joe Biden. That is happening. This Nicole Shanahan pick, as I was discussing it yesterday, should say to all of those people on the political right who are like, maybe I'll vote for Robert F. Kennedy. You know, he's opposed to forced COVID vaccines. He believes in free speech. He is a progressive's progressive from the word go. And you were always crazy to think that he was acceptable. I love you. I love you. But you're cuckoo, Boo Bear. You're nutty. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What's going on? Find everything at TonyKatz.com. He picked the most left-leaning lawyer he could. This woman, Nicole Shanahan, formerly married to Sergey Brin, allegedly had a relationship with Elon Musk, but they both say no. Wall Street Journal says yes, whatever. I don't care with who she sleeps with. I care that she's a progressive's progressive. So if you don't think that Joe Biden is left-leaning enough, which that's frightening, you might go that direction. In the conversation of who is he going to take votes from, it's Joe, not Donald Trump. He's not taking, I mean, to the extent that someone might decide, screw it, I'm voting for him. I just want everything to fall apart. Let's be nuts. It's possible. It is possible that that someone could do that. But is it far more possible, if not probable, if not plausible, however you want to put it, that Democrats will say, that Joe Biden doesn't care enough about the environment. That Joe Biden isn't progressive enough. We need someone even further. I'm voting for Robert F. Kennedy. Yes, that is much more possible. Without question. And remember where their end is. It's always important to discuss the end game of the left and how surprising it is to watch people go through this and then realize, wait a second, there is no end game. That's the part that I think freaks people out. There is no end game. Their philosophies, their theories, their ideas never stop. Okay, we're done. There's always one more way, one more methodology, one more system by which we can, quote unquote, better things. You know, I'm opposed to do-goodery. Oh, I hate do-goodery because do-goodery rarely ever does good. It goes along the line with, like, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. That's do-goodery. And what do-goodery really does, what do-goodery really allows to have happen, is absolutely horrific things under the guise of, we're only trying to help. That brings us to Dennis Meadows. I know nothing of Dennis Meadows until I saw this video clip yesterday. This is a guy who has a PhD from MIT. I'm not saying that on paper, remarkably smart guy. He is a guy who spent time as the director of something called the Club of Rome Project. This project, Club of Rome, engages the idea that, simply stated, there's too many of us. I'm sorry, who's us, Tony? You mean conservatives? No. You mean Jews? No, I wouldn't have said it like that. What do you mean? I mean people. They believe there are too many people. The only way to save us from ourselves, take a look at their website, Emerging New Civilizations, Planetary Emergency, Reframing Economics, Rethinking Finance. Well, the only way to save us from ourselves, according to Dennis Meadows, is the necessary depopulation of Mother Gaia, planet Earth.
In one way or another, we are so far, globally, we are so far above the population and the consumption levels which can be supported by this planet that I know in one way or another it's going to come back down. So I don't hope to avoid that. I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way. Peaceful. Peace doesn't mean that everybody's happy, but it means that conflict isn't solved through violence, through force, but rather in other ways. And so that's what I hope for.
You hope for depopulation without force? I don't know. I don't know how you're going to get that.
The planet can support something like a billion people, maybe 2 billion, depending on how much liberty and how much material consumption you want to have.
Depending on how much liberty? My gosh, Club of Rome, just call yourselves Club Thanos. The only people who looked at Avengers Endgame and said, that's a great strategy. We need a gauntlet and we're going to need some stones. I don't know where we go for those. They got those at Walmart. We just need we need like a glove and we need a ruby. And snappity snap snap. These people. They're going to save the environment. And you thought it was just about not having as much air conditioning and getting rid of gas stoves. They never stop. This is Tony Katz today.
from a vessel that weighs about 200 million pounds, orders of magnitude bigger than cargo ships that were in service in that region at the time that the bridge was first built. We also know that this is yet another demonstration of the importance of our roads and bridges, which is one of many reasons why the Biden-Harris administration worked so hard to get the infrastructure package passed, and why roads and bridges are the single biggest category in that package.
See how ridiculous
we are committed to delivering every federal resource.
He's talking about the bridge collapse. He's part of the White House briefing today. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. It makes sense that he's there. It's an interesting conversation when you get into the idea that this bridge, which was built in 1977, was not meant to withstand. It wasn't built to withstand this direct hit from a cargo ship that is far larger than anything that existed in 1977. That's a legitimate conversation. But for us, it says, okay, well, then why didn't we protect the supports 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago? A decade ago, why didn't we just pour some extra concrete? Create some extra guardrails? I don't know. Put a pillow in front. Something. That the bridge was not built to be able to take this kind of hit is something that we can rationally accept. But it doesn't answer why the bridge got hit. That's something different. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. 833-468-8669, 833-GOT-TONY. But to then say, thank goodness we passed the infrastructure package? This isn't about you and your ideological fantasies, Pete. Even when I agree with you, and I did earlier, my God, you know how to ruin anything. Was I right when I called him smarmy, or was I right when I called him smarmy? Good gosh. You're engaged in a conversation we actually want to have. All right, explain to us how these things are built. Explain to us how the ships are working. Explain these things. Meanwhile, the Deputy Commandant for the Coast Guard, Vice Admiral Peter Gauthier, is speaking now. Let's hear from him talking about, of course, this cargo ship that hit the bridge over the Patapsco River in Baltimore. You have six construction workers. They've called off the search, who are presumed dead. Let's hear from the deputy commandant.
Other agencies that were involved. The Coast Guard and the response community is deeply saddened that the missing individuals have not survived. And the Coast Guard appreciates the state of Maryland's leadership and humanity in supporting the family members of the missing. I'd like to personally thank the state and local responders for their heroic search and rescue efforts. While we didn't achieve the outcome that we had hoped for, it was a tremendous team effort in the treacherous operational conditions. As this aspect of the response shift to recovery operations, and consistent with the President's direction to get the port up and running as soon as possible, the Coast Guard highest priority now is restoring the waterway for shipping, stabilizing the motor vessel dolly and removing it from the site, and coordinating a maritime casualty investigation under the leadership of the National Transportation and Safety Board. So just a couple of words on each one of those. So in terms of assessing restoring the waterway, the Coast Guard is very tightly connected to the Army Corps of Engineers as they lead in that role as the lead federal agency for that effort. As we were in the Oval Office, the President called General Spellman, the chief of the Army Corps of Engineers, who is on site. General Spellman and I had a number of conversations yesterday in terms of the coordinated approach moving forward, and they are moving very aggressively in putting resources and mobilizing the necessary equipment, conducting the analysis and the underwater surveys to do that. In terms of continuing to stabilize the vessel, mitigating any pollution threat, and removing the vessel from the area, the vessel is stable, but it still has over 1.5 million gallons of fuel oil and lube oil on board, and it does have 4,700 cargo containers on board. 56 of those contain hazardous materials, and two are missing overboard. The ones that are in the water do not contain hazardous materials. And then around 13 or so on the bow of the ship were damaged as the bridge collapsed and impacted the front of that ship. So the Coast Guard has moved aggressively to board the vessel, and we have teams on board. The responsible party, the ship operator, has mobilized, activated their marine salvage plan in addition to their marine pollution response plan, both things that are required by the United States Coast Guard. The Salver is a Resolve Marine Incorporated, and they have begun mobilizing resources to take the next steps appropriate to refloat the vessel and remove it from that area. The real critical thing here is that, as you know, a portion of the bridge remains on the bow of that ship, and we will be coordinating very closely with the Army Corps of Engineers and their contractors to first effect the removal of that debris before the vessel can then be removed. The vessel bow is sitting on the bottom because of the weight of that bridge debris on there. And there are underwater surveys that are happening by remotely operated vehicle. Divers will be in the water today to complete that underwater survey. There's no indication that there's any flooding or any damage underneath the waterline to that vessel. And that effort will continue. We'll keep you informed of that. And then lastly, in terms of the casualty investigation, as the Secretary had said, this is led by the National Transportation and Safety Board. I've had a couple of conversations with Chair Hammondy on this account. And basically what we've done is we've activated a memorandum of understanding between the Coast Guard and NTSB. And because of the multimodal and complex nature of this investigation, we will be providing Coast Guard investigators for what we call a Marine Board of Investigation, which is our highest level of investigation in the Coast Guard, that will fold in and coordinate with the NTSB investigation as that moves forward. I think the Secretary closed with some top-line messages, and for us, I can tell you that our unified command, which is essentially a term that we use in the United States for how we mobilize against crises with all the appropriate federal, state, local agencies, and other stakeholders. We have a tremendous amount of talent on there and a lot of resourcing. And given the magnitude and importance of this response, it's going to be very, very aggressive moving forward, and we'll keep you informed of that. Thank you.
So that is the Coast Guard Deputy Commandant, Vice Admiral Peter Gauthier. He's going to answer some questions, but very happy to at least hear someone explain why some things aren't being moved. And the answer is some stuff can't be moved yet. There's no knowing what the bridge that has collapsed onto the cargo ship, the Dali, which hit the support beam of the Francis Scott Key Bridge over the Patapsco River, forcing its collapse. No idea what other damage could be done. They don't want to sink it. They have these goods on board, including hazardous materials. They're going to move slowly and meticulously when it comes to doing so. The idea of the search and rescue, that's sadly no longer going on. But it was good to get actual data as to what's happening and what's taking place. I'm going to leave it to some of the questions right now from the White House press corps.
So most of these things are things like mineral oils, and even though they're hazardous, we've determined that there really isn't any kind of threat to the public.
And Secretary Buttigieg, for you, President Biden has said the federal government should front the full cost of reconstructing the bridge. What do the early estimates say that cost will be, and how quickly can you get that money?
We don't have dollar estimates yet, but we actually have provisions that allow us to begin releasing funding even while that is being determined. My understanding is, as we speak this afternoon, an emergency relief funding request has come in from the Maryland State DOT. We'll be processing that immediately to start getting them what they need. Also, later today, there will be a design and procurement-oriented meeting that we'll participate in, our Federal Highway Administration, along with MDOT. Again, obviously, it's early days, but now is the time to begin scoping that out so that they can get to work.
We'll get into some more of that later. That press conference continues. Keep it here. I'm Tony Katz.
And let me finally ask you about a New York Times report, but other reporting that we have done on Elon Musk and his relationship with China. Obviously, Tesla competing now against their cheaper EVs. But he's really dependent on that Chinese market, very tied in with them. He has huge defense contracts. His satellites are the satellites we rely on for so much of our communication. Is it a national security problem for, when it and his rockets, of course, is it a national security problem for our government to have so much reliance on this one entrepreneur?
I wonder if that question will ever get asked of somebody on the political left. And by the way, I don't think that Elon Musk is on the political right. I don't. What he says in public, I'm supposed to believe this? I don't as of yet. But he did set Twitter free. He did what Jack Dorsey would never do. And because of that, now he's an asset of China and he can't be trusted. We have to do something about Elon Musk. He can't be allowed this much power. Good Lord. That was Andrea Mitchell asking questions of Janet Yellen. You want to talk about a national security issue? Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. There you go. She wants to let us know how successful the Biden agenda really is. That's what she's here to do. She's here to let us know that, thank goodness, Joe has made everything just peachy keen, super great.
So the president has indicated, and I certainly agree, that getting the cost of living down should be a number one economic priority. And he's proposed many different ways of doing this. But one important way is by lowering energy prices and diminishing their volatility. Right now, when Putin invades Ukraine, or there are supply disruptions in the Middle East, we can see oil and energy costs skyrocketing, harming America's families. And the Inflation Reduction Act is a comprehensive piece of
I was trying to stop at a comprehensive piece of, and then I was going to let everybody just fill in the rest. You can complete that sentence. It's like the world's most awesome Mad Lib. They don't do Mad Libs anymore, do they? Like, can you still get Mad Libs? Does everyone know what a Mad Lib was? Mad Libs was a book. It was like a flip book. And you would have this story. And then it would be like, you know, I would have the book. All right, give me a noun. Give me a verb. Name a place, whatever the case may be. And then we'd read off the story with your answers, and it was just hilarious. Oh, the jocularity. The jocularity. There are apps now. You can do the Muppet Mad Libs. I'm actually on it. There's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer Mad Libs. So there you go. You got that going for you. By the way, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was an excellent TV show. Absolutely. Joss Whedon may be a big giant jerk face, but excellent TV show. This is now the job of the Treasury Secretary. I lied about transitory inflation. I lied about the economy for 3 years. And now I'm here to tell you how great Joe Biden is. That is precious. Here is where the economy is, ladies and gentlemen. Are you ready? Are you listening? California restaurants cut jobs as fast food wages set to rise.
Ew, David.
Who didn't see this coming? California moves the wages for fast food workers to $20 an hour. It's a $20 an hour minimum wage. Who didn't know that the next step was to cut jobs? I brought up the do-gooders earlier. This is what they do. We're going to have a $20 hour minimum wage because that's the living wage, and companies are going to pay their fair share. And the company said, we can't afford this, so now we lay people off. The employee is now disenfranchised. Why? Because they can no longer negotiate in their best interest. They can't say to the employer, whoa, I'll do it for 16. I need the job. I'll do it for 16. I'm learning skills. I'll do it for 16. They're not allowed to negotiate in their best interest. Milton Friedman had this right. This is what happens when government institutes a minimum wage. There should be no minimum wage whatsoever. The minimum wage is a terrible idea. It is failure on failure. And here's the proof. Who didn't know that they raised the minimum wage to $20 an hour and then the employers are like, okay, we'll do it with half the staff. We will get ourselves a kiosk and we'll deliver the food via Roomba. I might bounce around the store a little bit, but eventually it'll get to you. Fries will still probably be warm. This goes along with the conversation that Chef Andrew Gruhl was having, formerly of Slapfish, a celebrity chef, certainly on social media, speaks very openly and clearly about regulation. Talking about how completely insane things like DoorDash and Grubhub have gotten, because they'll allow anybody to do to say, oh, the food wasn't right. 20% of orders in his restaurants were being refunded for no reason. He took DoorDash because he thought it was a necessary evil. Now he's like, forget this. You know how many restaurateurs I know who are like, I can't do that? Or I do it because I don't feel I have a choice? The costs are abusive. 20% returns. How many people aren't being hired because of all the money wasted because somebody's lying to a social media app, if you will, and saying, oh, that burger wasn't perfect. Oh, I finished it. You don't know that, but I'm just going to complain to you because you gave me my money back. So a $20 minimum wage coupled with services that charge insane fees. Now, of course, these companies can charge the insane fees. And of course, other companies can choose to use them or not use them. An interesting thing is that when you're, a pizzeria looking to hire delivery drivers, they're nearly impossible to find. But they're working for places like DoorDash and Grubhub. I'm not saying that it isn't a job for them, and I'm not saying that DoorDash and Grubhub can't exist. It's that when the restaurant groups say, we're no longer going to use you, maybe they'll start falling in line a little bit. It'll become a little bit more cost-effective for everybody. Right now, it's just nuts. And the minimum wage nonsense in California is harming people's livelihoods. And Janet Yellen wants to tell you that everything's great because of Joe Biden. Terrific.